How many of you are new to the village today? Welcome, it's great to have you with us. We've been at this for a week now, so I'm not going to entirely try to catch you up, but maybe you'll catch up as we go along. We've been talking about Sabbath. We spent the first 2 days talking about the Sabbath commandments in the Old Testament and how there's a different motivation for keeping the Sabbath in the Deuteronomy version, which says you keep the Sabbath because you were once slaves in Egypt and God freed you, so remember the slaves, a deep identification with the other as one of the implications of Sabbath and one of the reasons for keeping it. And then we talked about the Sabbath motivation. Come on down, we're not gotten too far yet. And if you could save that one seat there for the flutist. I didn't even call him Vienna. he's very kindly copying some more handouts, so we'll have some more in a minute. So the motivation in Exodus for keeping the Sabbath is because God created the earth in 6 days, and on the seventh day he Shabbatted. He stopped, and ergo we should too. And out of that is this deep sense that we've been talking about the gift of having a pattern, an in-train natural pattern, whereby you have productive work, which is also a gift, that gift of productivity, productive work for 6 days, and then a seventh day that you stop. And the gift of that, but not just for yourself, but for your community. That this is this part of it, and we've talked about this, is really complicated because we live in a society where different people have different Sabbath days and different needs, and you take a personal Sabbath. You think of it as a Sabbath personal thing, but there's something about this Sabbath is for the other, not just for yourself. Thank you, dear. I think we have people who have arrived who might need some, and if you can hand them out. And if you, let's see, there's some more Bibles here. Anybody need Bibles? Bibles, Bibles, Bibles.
Bible.
Bible. You don't have to kill yourself over handing the Bible. There's a bunch of chairs over on this side, so welcome over here, and I'll stick some Bibles over here. Then we went, we talked about the story of manna in the wilderness in Numbers and how the Sabbath works in that. And then we started talking about Jubilee and the remarkable challenge and gift of Jubilee, where there's an identity as a people who are released, who release others from debts, who get to come home, and the earth rests as well as people. A deep sense that the earth belongs to God. There is no such thing as private property. And we are all God's servants, so we cannot enslave the other. And yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about Jesus' first sermon. So does anyone who was here yesterday, are there still things burning in your heart about that passage or Luke's version of the Lord's Prayer that you want to just talk about or think about out loud? Yeah.
Not exactly on that, but I have something I've been thinking about, a lens I'm curious, and that is the whole notion that you have Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday, and that it's really on the Sabbath day that Jesus is in the tomb, that God stops, and that the powers of sin and death are destroyed is on the Sabbath. And I wonder about that as a lens of what does Holy Saturday mean, that it's a day where everyone stops, even Jesus and God.
Wow, that is just a fabulous thought. Thank you for that. I mean, what we're going to talk about this just a little bit at the end today, that what happens in the Christian community is because of resurrection, the day of Sabbath shifts to Sunday within the Christian community. But within the tradition, that stopping is terribly profound. We're going to get to that just a little bit today, but thank you for that. That's a really fascinating thought. Yeah. Were you going to add?
I was just going to mention what you talked about was the remembering that his death was on Friday, so his being in the grave was on the Jewish Sabbath.
Right, and that's just that's in some ways the death is the stopping. That's a lovely, yeah. Thank you. Other things on your hearts that you've been thinking about? Yeah.
You know, you talk about the 49th year, this is the release of. Have you ever thought about, most of us start working at 16? And how much is 16 and 49?
Go ahead, tell me.
65. Maybe we're supposed to retire at 65.
You know,
set free.
The whole notion of retirement and identity in our culture is so terribly interesting, isn't it? Because in most of the history of the world, your identification was who your parents were or what tribe you belonged to. You ask who you were, oh, I'm so-and-so's daughter. Right? I belong to this tribe, however that works in whatever culture you come from. But in American culture, if you ask who you are, you say what you do.
Yes.
You tell people your occupation, your work. Which, do we still have more? I think they maybe...
I can make more.
We can share. Share! It's a Sabbath notion. No, it isn't actually. But I could make it that. But then the notion of stopping from work, especially in terms of retirement, becomes so profoundly distressing for people because of the loss of identity. Because we are what we do in our culture. Now think about the Sabbath challenge to that identity. If you are what you do and what you work, then stopping for a lot of people is robbing you of who you are, robbing you of your identity. And scripture would like to challenge us on that. Now there is some lovely stuff about getting away from identification by who your parents were. I'm trying to idealize that. There's an equality that happens when you get away from that. But there's also, every good comes with its own other challenge, right? So there you are, come on down. There's seats hiding. They're hiding over there. So find a hidden seat. So here's my question for you this morning. As we move to the notion of Sabbath in New Testament, when you hear those combinations, what verse comes to mind? Sabbath in New Testament.
Jesus healing on the Sabbath. Sabbath.
Jesus healing on the Sabbath, yeah?
Yeah.
Is that the one that most comes to mind?
I think of Jesus and his disciples eating grain.
Yeah. Eating grain on the Sabbath? Anything else come to mind?
The Lord of the Sabbath.
Lord of the Sabbath. You know, you are an unusual group. I just want to say that. Because usually, when, at least it used to be, when I would ask this question, people would say, the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Right? That's the one I almost always get, but that's not the one that came out here. So that just blew everything I was going to say. So, not a New Testament thing. So even the idea, I did have statistics which I don't have in front of me, although I bet I could find them really fast. Ah, I did find them really fast. The word occurs 67 times in the New Testament. That's a lot of times. 43 times in the Synoptics, and then 13 times in John. So that's a lot. You know, the New Testament compared to the Old, it's just a little bit. That was funny.
I got hung up yesterday in the reading, when we were reading, and it said that on the Sabbath you could eat, your animals could eat, so on and so forth. And yet, in the New Testament, when we move into the New Testament, Jesus and the disciples are being put down for picking grain.
Yes!
So,
hold on to that! No.
I'll be quiet!
Notes.
Well, no, but it seems like if we're reading it literally, rather than as literature, and seeing what is there, there's a contradiction that's going on that it really troubled me that I didn't bring forth yesterday.
Let's talk about that.
Thank
you for asking that question. And the way we'll do this is by looking at a story in Mark, starting at Mark 2, verse 23, if you want to open up your Bibles. Mark, this very story. You know, I just did that because you asked the question. I was not intending to do that.
Do I get my $10 now?
Yeah. So, and here's the story. And listen up. So it's Mark 2, the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, beginning in verse 23. And I'm going to read it here. 1:7. Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest, and he ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and he gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.' Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. They watched him to see whether he would cure him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, 'Come forward.' Then he said to them, 'Is it not lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill?' But they were silent." So I know what one question in the room is. Why is this such a big deal? What's going on here? Why are the opponents of Jesus so sure that Jesus shouldn't be doing these things? Are there other things that struck you that you hear in this text that, yeah?
I always was struck by that he really didn't heal the man with the withered arm. He didn't say you were healed. He just said, "Stretch out your arm." And couldn't anybody have said that as well?
So he's not really doing this yet. There's just this little cat and mouse game going on. Ah, lovely. Other things that struck you? Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting that negative things are brought in on the Sabbath. Is it lawful to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? So not just the positive,
And where do you get those strong contrasts of doing good or harm, but particularly of saving life or killing? Who does that? Well, I mean, I suppose we all do. But it's an invitation to think about God, I think, not just humans. Who saves life and kills even on the Sabbath? God is free. So there's a huge underlying challenge of, who am I going on under this. Not just what am I doing, but what is my claim for who I am that's going on under this? Other thoughts or things that,
But I love the fact he asked the questions before they asked the question, and he nails them for, hey, you're working today, you're trying to figure out how to conspire against me. So let's call a spade a spade. You know, we're I happen to be doing good, you're doing evil, but we're both doing, so.
Yes, is conspiring to trap, not work. Lovely thought. Yeah, don't you just love this?
You could relate that to our this day, as far as don't work on the Sabbath,
right?
And you can.
What does that mean?
It's universal. It always has been and always will be.
Will somebody use that to nail you?
Right.
Yeah. Lovely.
I was wondering about the. Is there a consistency of every time Jesus does something on the Sabbath, it's an act of justice and good versus, so that doing acts of justice is not work.
Every time Jesus does something on the Sabbath, the claim is it's an act of justice, and is doing justice not work? Or I might ask, I might take your observation and ask it in a slightly different way. Not is it not work, but is it getting to the heart of the meaning of Sabbath?
Yeah. Yes,
where the question of work or not work is not at the heart of what Sabbath is about. It's a question of what is the values that, what are the values underneath this? And this is the very discussion that Jesus is inviting us into in all of these texts that, you know, there are, I think I wrote them down, there are 8 texts all together about conflict narratives about the Sabbath in the Synoptic Gospels. And 7 of those are healing narratives. 7 of them are healing narratives. They're not just the Synoptics, all the Gospels. 2 of these stories are exclusively in Luke, 2 of them are exclusively in John, and the others are found in more than one gospel. So, just a few observations, and then we're going to read Matthew. What stands behind these questions? That was your question. Why are these Pharisees, the opponents of Jesus in this case, asking these questions? And clearly something has happened between Old Testament laws and this community practice within the Jewish community in the first century that makes plucking grain a problem. And here, our tendency to skip straight from the Old Testament to the New Testament and assume that first century Judaism is just straight out of the Old Testament is historically mistaken. Because there's a whole bunch of centuries that happen between there, and there's a whole bunch of books that are written. So you have a whole lot of laws from the Book of Jubilees, for example, or there's rabbinic texts, or there's Philo, and these are called halakhic laws. They are laws which are based in Torah, but they grow up in the tradition of the people, and they end up getting into the Mishnah and the Talmud, but you're not going to go back and find them in what we think of as the Old Testament. So what's happening here, what Jesus objects to, is the collection of nitpicking laws that have undermined the true meaning of Sabbath from the Torah and prophets, from that tradition. So Sabbath, responds Jesus, was made for human rest and refreshment, not for slavery. And such nitpicking, such legalism surrounding observation, it happened in Judaism in the first century, it later happened in Christianity in the early American Protestants. the same kind of oral law, if you will, some of it being written, where strict Sabbath restrictions becomes evidence of deep piety. And it becomes very what we would call legalistic. And our tendency within Christianity is to look at Judaism and label Judaism, the practice of Judaism, that becomes nitpicking in the first century and say, oh, that's Judaism, that's what Judaism is. In fact, Jesus is calling people to say, hey, that's not what Judaism is, much as we might call 19th century nitpicking about Sabbath not what we would like to identify as Christianity. So it's that same tendency where there's a history to the practice of any faith, and knowing what history. The problem for us as Christians is Judaism becomes identified with the negative picture of Judaism as the enemies of Jesus. And it's, you know, it's been a problem for us as Christians forever. So there you go. What Jesus knows is that Sabbath was made to give life. And the healing of the man with the withered hand is in all three synoptics. And you get that sense that healing has to do with saving life. And Sabbath is about breath and life and the pattern of life and creation and all of those things. So what I would love to do now is look at this story in Matthew. We're going to start, actually, interestingly, I hope it's interesting, in Matthew 11, we're going to start the last verse of Matthew 11. See, you've got to do away with chapter numbers, only if we did, we'd never be able to find anything. So, but what happens is because they're chapter numbers, we forget to look at what comes before and after. So we're going to look at Matthew 11, 28, and we're going to go all the way through to 12, 14. And I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to ask you to break into your small groups. And here are our devotional questions. When I read it, what word or phrase strikes you? Are there any stories or memories that you recall? What in the passage challenges you? Or what in the passage delights you? And you can't do all of these, so just choose what you want. What is God calling us to be or to do or to tell? And just in case those are not enough questions, I'm going to add one other task for you. As I read this, we just read this in Mark. What do you hear different in Matthew that you didn't hear in Mark? So you might be thinking, that's way too much to think about. So, you know, turn to your neighbor and say, you think on that one, I'll think on this one, and we'll do this. So I'm going to start with Matthew chapter 28, and when we're finished, our discussions, we'll call you back with one of the hymns on the handout. Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. When the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. He said to them, have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which was not lawful for him and his companions to eat, but only for the priests. Or have you not read in the law On the Sabbath, the priests in the temple break the Sabbath, and you're guiltless. I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. He left that place and entered their synagogue. A man was there with a withered hand, and they asked him, is it lawful to cure on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him? And he said to them, suppose one of you has only one sheep, and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath. Will you not lay hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a human being than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and it was restored as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him. Talk to each other. And so this kind of invitation You want to get nitpicky? Let's get really nitpicky. I can out nitpick the best of them. You know, I can show you where you're inconsistent. First, I'll show you where you're inconsistent. And then I'll show you where you've forgotten what's at the heart. What's at the soul of this. And, you know, so all this stuff about David being greater than the priests.
How are the priests being not profaning the Sabbath, or how are they doing?
Well, because they're allowed to do stuff. Because it's kind of like pastors who work on the Sabbath, right? Right. It's that same kind of thing. In fact, it's the, in some ways, the thing that keeps troubling people when we do think about Sabbath rest, and then you think about pastors, families, and how does this work for us? Or anyone else who has to, for reasons of life and health and service, how does that work? It becomes always one of the huge challenges of making this a community reality. Yeah.
I'm not going to like this, but is preaching on Sunday not work?
Well, of course it's work.
Is it? Jesus taught on the Sabbath, and they never accused him of working then.
All right, we're having an interesting discussion, you and I. Is the issue trying to define what is work or not? Which is, if you take Sabbath as law, not gift, primarily, then you're always, always going to have to be struggling and working to define what work is. I think the discussion tends to go, not let's quibble over what work is, but let's say what stopping work is for, and sometimes work is good on the Sabbath, or it's not redefining what you're doing as not work, so that you can then follow the law, right? Because then you're caught in this endless cycle of hierarchy of work, and you're going to kill yourself. Yeah.
And isn't that just exactly what's coming up?
Yes.
Which is Jesus asking the question about the sheep.
Right.
Because it's that nitpicking question about what is work.
Yeah, we're always, I mean, I don't know of another one of the Ten Commandments that makes us such nitpickers. Well, maybe killing. Well, maybe adultery. All right, maybe. I take it back. All right. So he goes through this, something greater than the temple is here. I mean, Matthew gets so profound. And then he leads us into the heart of the argument. If you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. You know, he really knew his Bible well. So he's quoting Hosea 6, where God says, I desire steadfast love, I desire chesed, I desire this covenantal love and community where love is not mushy. Love is committed, and it always means action. I desire, it always means work, if you will. I desire steadfast love. I desire chesed, not sacrifice, the knowledge of God, rather than burnt offering. So what is the faith? What's at the heart of the faith? There is always, always, always this temptation to think that it's what we do on Sunday morning, right? It's always what we do, right? And in the culture of the day, it was keeping the sacrifices straight. Now the culture of Hosea's day, right? Getting the temple worship straight. That's where God is. And this challenge of Hosea, that at the heart of the faith is our communion with God and one another. And at the heart of the faith is grace, is mercy, is steadfast love, all those words we've been working on all week. And not sacrifice becomes a kind of code word for all that stuff, right? All that stuff that in and of itself isn't bad, it's just bad when it undercuts mercy, when it undercuts steadfast love. So it's putting our religious practices into perspective. You know, you don't get to God through sacrifice, doing the golden staircase up to heaven. You know, it's, you just don't, right? It's this mercy, grace, sacrifice, knowledge of God, by which Hosea means deep knowledge of God. So that's Jesus's gauntlet. You know, that's the gauntlet. Do you know what this means? Do you know what you're doing when you start nitpicking? You think you get to God through sacrifice, not mercy. It's just stunning. So we know from Scripture, what is greater than the work of the temple sacrifice is mercy. Everything is tied to the mercy of God and the mercy we show one another. And the Pharisees, says Jesus, are breaking a greater law by not showing mercy. And more, all of this points to the true Lord of the Sabbath, who himself now brings true meaning to the Sabbath. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. It's just stunning stuff. I think that takes us back to where we started this story. Instead of starting where you think you're going to start, move to the end of chapter 11, and that, come to me, all you who are weary. Who gives true rest? Where does true Sabbath lie? How is Jesus Lord of the Sabbath? Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you Sabbath. I'll do it. And it's not hard. It's just not hard. It's not hard work. You don't have to become this beast of burden with a yoke, right? Or there is a yoke, but it's not the yoke you expect. The yoke... Now, that's playing with the yoke of the law, by the way, because in this case, everybody, the big metaphor was the yoke of the law. So, you know, look at Philo and all this stuff. You got the yoke of the law. It's all over the tradition, the intertestamental tradition. And so Jesus is just saying, no. Come to me. So what do you think? Oh, I hate that question. As soon as I say, what do you think, I think wrong. Which is why I like those questions better. My default question when I'm not thinking is, what do you think? And it's my least favorite question. What do you hear? What are you feeling? What? Yeah.
So, with this comment of, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath, and how we interpret the New Testament based on the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament. But Christ also said, you know, what are the two greatest commandments? You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, love your neighbor as yourself. I'd like to see us start interpreting the New Testament in that way. To see, you know, yes, now the Sabbath is abolished. If you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind.
Or, I would say it quite differently. Not that the Sabbath is abolished, but that the Sabbath is rediscovered.
Yeah.
As a gift of true stopping. It is transformed. It is enfleshed. It is enriched. It is rediscovered. Not the slightest bit abolished. Just All kinds of other things are poured in, including this embodiment of all that Sabbath is in Christ, well, along with everything else. Yeah, yeah.
Well, so, as you were saying, that it's a play on word, this yoke and yoke of the law. And so if you read verse 28 in that light, you know, come to me, all that you are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke, not
right.
the yoke of the law.
Exactly.
Take my yoke. I have two commandments, you know.
Although then we're going to make Jesus into the law, if we do it that way. I mean, which of course we will, because that's who we are. I mean, we will always, every morning, we will wake up and make everything into law. I promise you. Right? And then I will promise you that you have a promise that will help you with this problem. Okay, I'm moving on because I want to. It's my law. It's the Jacobson law of Bible study. And I got so much stuff here. All right, we're on the next page finally. I want to talk just briefly about Jesus' Sabbath keeper. As the one who, model of one who balances work and rest. And I owe this, as I owe so much to Wayne Mueller. He notes that we usually think of Jesus teaching and healing and wandering through the crowds, but we forget that he just often sends folks away and retreats to a place of rest and prayer. And you get this all over. I'll read you just a few. Matthew 14:23, after he dismissed the crowd, he went up to a mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. Mark 1:35. In the morning, when it was still dark, he got up and went to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Mark 6:30, the apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught, all their stuff, all that they had done. And he said, come away to a deserted place all by yourself and rest a while, stop a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And you can look at those other texts too. Jesus, notes Mueller, didn't wait until everyone had been properly cared for. He listened to the rhythm of Sabbath and stopped when the time of rest had come. In this way, Jesus for us, says Mueller, is a model of Sabbath keeping. His work was fed and nourished by his stopping and praying. And though Sabbath is not mentioned by name in these times of withdrawal, it's often, as it usually is in the healing stories, I think that Mueller is correct, that there's a spirit of Sabbath in this, a model. So I think it is a very wonderful insight. But you find an incredibly different picture of Jesus and the Sabbath in the Gospel of John. He doesn't do this the same way. So we're going to take a little journey through John, a quick journey, you know, a 5-minute journey through John. a different Sabbath picture. As you would expect from John, all the accounts in John of Jesus' healing move even more in the direction of pointing, it's Jesus, stupid. I mean, that's John in a nutshell. All right. I'm a little sarcastic someplace. A little, you say? All right. We are told that we're not usually told that it's the Sabbath until the end of the healing stories. And the stories become very exclusively bound up in who Jesus is. So, chapter 5, John 5, 9. And at once the man was made well, and he took up his mat and began to walk. Now, that was the day of the Sabbath. So the Jews came to the man who had been cured. It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful to carry your mat. But he answered them, the man who made me well said to me, take up your mat and walk. They asked him, who is this man that he said to you, take up your mat and walk?
always pointing to Jesus. Jesus is always working. Then chapter 7, we'll look at 7:21 following. Jesus answered them, I performed one work, and all of you were astonished. Moses gave you circumcision, which isn't quite true. It was the patriarchs, but let's not quibble with Jesus. It's his human side, not his divine side. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath in order that the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me because I healed a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Do not judge by appearances, but judge by right judgment. New comparison. Very few activities are allowed on the Sabbath. Circumcision was one of them in that intervening time. And Jesus points to himself and his healing the whole person as yet a greater sign. Right? John loves signs. And we've been talking about signs, Sabbath as a sign. So now Jesus' healing is the sign. Now, more than this, look at the last Sabbath healing in John 9 about the blind man. And we can't look at all of it, unfortunately. It's another one of these fabulous stories. John 9:14. Now it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. And then the Pharisees began to ask him how he received his sight. He said to him, he put mud on my eyes. Then I washed, and now I see. But some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath. But others say, how can a man who is a sinner perform such signs? And they were divided. Now, look at what Jesus did, and think about this for a minute. Sabbath is supposed to be about the cessation of work, stop. Yet in John, in contrast to the synoptics, Jesus embarks on a ceaseless round of activity. Why? He is like God who never rests. Now, I say that even though those of you who were with me at the beginning of the week remember, and those of you who have actually read Genesis 1, know that in Genesis 1, God rests. But in the intervening time, there is, in the intertestamental period, there's this new idea that God actually doesn't rest on the Sabbath. Because God has a job of keeping chaos at bay. And if God were really to rest, chaos would ensue. So in John, this ceaseless activity of Jesus is like the ceaseless activity of God. And what material does he use in healing the man? Mud. You know, it's an act of creation. Jesus creates with his own spittle, his own water, and the waters of salvation, and cures the man in creation, and it's just astonishing. Now, what else does God do prior to rest? God works towards salvation. And what is Jesus doing? Working ceaselessly towards the goal of salvation. John 4:34, I'm skipping back for a minute. Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to complete his work. 5:16-18. Therefore, the Jews started persecuting Jesus because he was doing such things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, my Father is still working, and I am also working. For this reason, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because he was breaking the Sabbath. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but also calling God his own Father, thereby making himself equal to God. This is definitely upping the ante. 17:4, I glorified you on earth by finishing the work you gave me to do. Do you hear all this language? Huh? Now we're ready. Turn to 19:28, and we're going to get to your gorgeous observation. Huh? After this, when Jesus knew all that was finished, all was now finished, he said, in order to fulfill the scripture, "I am thirsty," and a jar full of sour wine was standing there. So they put a sponge full of wine on a branch of hyssop and held it to his mouth. And when Jesus had received the wine, what does he say?
It is finished.
It is finished. And then he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. Since it was the day of preparation, the Jews did not want the bodies left on the cross during the Sabbath, especially because the Sabbath was the day of such great solemnity. So now, finally, after all that work, Jesus rests. And he and we get the Sabbath. And now Sabbath has been redefined. It's now not just creation. It's now not just weekly or even every 7 or 50 years. Now in all time is marked by the ultimate cessation of activity. The cross finishes the work. And rest comes. And as you said, the rest looks for all the world like it's death. But it's not. And the week is stretched into the first week of the new week where death is meant by resurrection. And we redefine what Sabbath is. We move it because of the resurrection. It's a deep reading of the connection of John and Sabbath and how it all gets redefined. Oh, we better just sing real fast. Dear Lord and Mother of Mercy. Okay. Sabbath becomes eternal rest, and it moves into a whole different way. Sabbath takes a really interesting journey in the Christian tradition. In light of the resurrection, I say Sabbath becomes Sunday, and then, as we've learned from Michael, Augustine allegorizes Sabbath sort of similarly to the way Hebrews does. To symbolize eternal life. And then it wasn't until Gregory the Ninth, 1234, think about how late that is, that it became ecclesiastical law that Sunday was the day of rest. That's really late, you know? Stop. Luther, as so often strangely modern, spiritualizes Sabbath so that it can be any day. Calvin emphasizes gathering to hear the law and perform religious rites. Sabbatarianism isn't there till the 17th to 19th centuries. And then in the foundation of our country, some immigrated to Massachusetts in 1620 because King James issued a declaration of sports, which allowed Morris dancing and the Maypole on the Sabbath. So they came to the United States. Laughed, but it was terribly serious. It was terribly serious. But how deeply the Sabbath works is part of deep in our American tradition. Deep in our American tradition. Oh dear. I'm going to leave you with one thought, and if you want, we can stand and sing the last hymn as you leave. Marva Dawn, who does a wonderful job talking about Sabbath. All right, shall we stop the lecture for the sake of the...
No.
No.
If it starts being here.
Yeah.
If we burn, we burn.
We burn together!
Well, my name's not Joan of Arc. Thank you.
She talks about Marva Dawn talks about four categories of values for our Sabbath keeping. And I want to leave you with these thoughts. Here are her four. The first one is ceasing. What do we cease on the Sabbath? Cease work, cease accomplishment, cease anxiety and worry, cease trying to be God, cease possessiveness, cease conformity to the world, cease meaninglessness, add your own cease. What do you stop on the Sabbath? Her second one is resting. There's spiritual rest. We don't have to do work to get to God. God will get to us. There's physical rest. There's emotional rest. There's intellectual rest. There's social rest, where you rest with the community, not just alone. Her third one is embracing. What do you embrace on the Sabbath? Embrace intentionality, embrace the values of your faith, embrace the community, embrace time rather than space, embrace giving rather than requiring or acquiring, embrace your calling in life, embrace shalom, embrace wholeness. And then her last category is feasting. It's what we talked about last night with joy, you know? Feasting on the eternal, feasting with music, feasting with beauty, feasting with food, feasting with affection, feasting with dancing with children. Sure, that's not in her categories, but it is in her category. So I invite you to take these values and think about this in your life and in the life of your community. And let's stand and sing the last song.